And the time is 2 minutes after 10 a.m. You are listening to KBOO. Coming up next, People Rise Up. And this program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and by the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org. Welcome to People Rise Up, our last show of 2004. Quite the year, eh? My name's Andrew Geller, and this morning we are going to close out the year by talking about possibly the topic I've done more radio on now than anything else, and in such a short amount of time, that being the fraudulent cover story of 9/11 and the research going on nationally primarily, but globally, to uncover what really did happen leading up to and on that day. We're pretty clear what's happened since. My guest this morning is Carolyn Betts. She is an attorney, and she is, in fact, the lead attorney involved in the drafting of a citizen's complaint and petition to the Attorney General of the State of New York for an independent grand jury investigation regarding 9/11. So I'll just welcome you to the airwaves real briefly here, Carolyn, and then I want to read from the complaint itself. So welcome.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us. So I just want to read actually the final paragraph of, I guess it's the cover letter, so that people are really clear in terms of what this complaint and petition feels it could uncover were it granted and an independent investigation were open. This also relates to the last couple three shows I've done regarding 9/11 with Paul Thompson, Mike Rupert, and others. Quoting, "In this complaint and petition, we submit compelling evidence constituting probable cause that some or all of the following crimes and possible additional crimes have been committed, and that you have jurisdiction and prosecutorial discretion to investigate and prosecute the perpetrators of such crimes: murder, criminally negligent homicide or manslaughter, assault, reckless endangerment, official misconduct, criminal offenses relating to public safety, enterprise corruption, obstruction of justice, and the infliction of emotional distress, including causing untold suffering and billions of dollars in damages on the citizens, businesses, and institutions of and upon the state of New York itself, and cities, counties, and other jurisdictions within New York, and the criminal facilitation or solicitation thereof, and conspiracy or accessorial conduct in connection therewith." Quite the mouthful.
Pretty broad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty broad, but, well, so is the entire investigation. So let's just look a little bit towards how this how this petition, complaint and petition, came to be. It's obviously built upon the research of many, many folks. How did it get to be decided that, okay, we need to petition the Attorney General of New York?
Well, two things happened. One, we had a generous donor whose name is Jimmy Walter, who financed a poll in a Zogby international poll, Zogby being one of the foremost polling organizations in the country or world, I guess. He engaged Zogby or paid the bill for engaging Zogby to do a poll of New Yorkers, and we found that over 40% of New Yorkers believed in official complicity in the events surrounding 9/11. The other thing that happened was we conducted an informal hearing, or formal hearing, with Representative Cynthia Kinney from Georgia, who she's now a representative. She was actually removed from office for a while because of her accusations or demands for investigation as to the official roles in what actually happened in 9/11. And she chaired a panel where in New York City, and we had testimony from various experts and people who were witnesses and had information that was damning to public officials and private interests. And that was a full-day hearing. And the result of that was that the commissioners, the people who convened the hearing, voted to recommend there be a demand for an investigation by the Attorney General of New York. Also, part of the poll, there was a question in the poll, the Zogby poll, indicating that New Yorkers would like to see a new investigation, and that was followed up by WBAI, one of the shows on WBAI, whereby they called local New York legislators to find out what kind of support they might have for such a grand jury investigation, and found something like 15 or 17 of the local and state legislators would support that. So that's how it started. That was in September of this year.
Now, in reading through the complaint, as I have a couple of times, and it's not terribly long if you just sort of go over the I guess like the first layer of it. If you get into all the appendices, it gets very, very long.
Right.
I notice that what you folks are bringing up in terms of this petition appears in my mind and the minds of many folks I've spoken with over the years about this to be sort of like the easiest and most obvious things, flaws, omissions, questions, series of questions to actually get an investigation open. And I'm curious about the process of deciding, you know, let's use this as an example of why this needs to happen, and let's not use this speculation, supposition, idea. Let's bring that up once an investigation gets open. Is that kind of what happened?
Yes, that was very much our thinking. Our strategy involved, number one, picking out some areas like the environmental damage as a result of the falling of the buildings and the tainting of the air that caused a great deal of respiratory harm to New Yorkers, picking some things that were purely local. That's a very local type of thing, and the fact that the buildings collapsed and questioning whether there were building standards that that should be at issue or what exactly caused these buildings to fall down. Those are uniquely local issues that we felt nobody could really challenge the right of New York authorities to look into. Then we also took some of the more obvious, most compelling arguments in terms of being knee-jerk, gee, that doesn't make any sense. You know, like the falling of World Trade Center 7 and the quotations from the owner saying, yeah, we decided to pull the building.
Mm-hmm.
we highlighted some obvious lies, one of which came about, you know, we got the proof of right before we filed, which involved the black boxes, the discovery of the black boxes, because there had been official statements that there were, before the Keene Commission, that there were no black boxes were found. And the breaking news right before we filed was that some firefighters came forward and said, oh, yeah, we saw the black boxes. You know, so catching somebody red-handed in a lie was another thing we thought was an obvious and compelling reason for the Attorney General to take, you know, to take a serious look at what we were saying.
Well, and it also has examples of both the Keene Commission and the Congressional Investigation, the joint inquiry, as being wholly riven with conflicts of interest and completely ignoring, again, fairly obvious avenues of investigation, even if just to say, okay, yeah, we were wrong about that. But
well,
I mean,
the whole opening of the complaint, as you've probably noticed, is an argument why there has never been a real independent investigation of this matter. Because a lot of people, if they've read just the conventional media and heard official statements, think that the Keene Commission actually dealt with all the issues. And we actually had quotations from panel members of the Keene Commission saying that they weren't even trying to assign blame. Well, if you're not trying to assign blame, you're not getting an independent investigation of criminal wrongdoing. And so we spent a long time going through the existing avenues, including going through lawsuits, what whistleblowers had tried, what the Keene Commission had found, what the Congress had mostly not done, and going through all of those things to convince the Attorney General that there really never had been an independent investigation.
I'd actually just like to, again, read through a short list here. This is point 5 in the basis of the complaint. And it relates directly to pretty much all the investigations that have taken place so far, which assume a certain set of a priori and unquestioned assumptions. And I just want to read these for the benefit of the listening audience who may not be aware of, you know, how these are viewed together, how it relates to, it basically sort of is the official story in a collapsed nutshell format. But these are the things that the official story assumes and doesn't feel as though it needs to question. The four planes in question were flown by 19 Middle Eastern hijackers whose identities were resolved conclusively within hours and days following, and their identities have never been in doubt. The 9/11 plot was set into motion and financed by Osama bin Laden without direct financial backing from his family or other Saudi agents, and without the participation, involvement, or accessorial conduct or knowledge of any state or state agents, foreign or domestic, prior to or during the plot's execution. No U.S. officials could have had actionable foreknowledge of the plot. Investigations into the actions and behaviors of the U.S. government agents and Bush administration officials could not uncover greater culpability than unintentional failure of intelligence, communication, or surveillance, or at worst, individual incompetence or negligence. Suppression of relevant facts has been an undeniable necessity. No elements within the U.S. government or administration would exercise pressure or influence to avoid avenues of investigation. There were no reports from foreign governments, agencies, news services that needed to be examined or explored. The collapse of both World Trade Center North and South Towers were solely due to plane strikes and fire. And it is not considered problematic that WTC Building 7 was the first steel beam skyscraper in history to collapse solely from fire. No investigation of the collapse is required. Now, obviously, there's problems with all of those.
Right. Every single one is not really supportable.
Yeah, but it's really amazing that those are the assumptions. That's considered to be, you know, kind of what happened. So the attorney filed this originally, I guess, in kind of mid to late October, and it was amended and refiled about a month ago, about 5 weeks. What's the process now? The Attorney General's got it. They're going to look through the material in theory, and then?
Well, we're working on getting appointments for some of the complainants. The complainants, by the way, include a couple of parents of people who died in the World Trade Center, including one who was a lawyer for the police department, a first responder, a doctor who worked in an emergency room who was a first responder, and he's Muslim, a world Muslim leader. One person who was injured by from breathing the toxic dust in the air, and another one also who was similarly injured, who was a first responder, an emergency tech, we have something like 7 or 8 complainants who are representing New Yorkers in this group, and Elliot Spitzer's office has indicated that they're willing to sit down and meet with a group of the complainants and discuss this. Now, as you probably know, Elliot Spitzer has, since we filed the complaint, first of all, announced that he's running for governor of the state, and second of all, issued some statements indicating that he's calling off the troops a bit in his zeal to go after Wall Street perpetrators in the mutual fund and insurance industries that he's been a real bear about and a real citizens advocate about. So we don't know how those two particular events, as tied or not tied as they may be, could affect his willingness to go forward. But we certainly know that he needs air cover, because anybody who's out front and willing to stand up for the people is going to be the target of all sorts of efforts to stop him. And so we are also hoping to generate interest among legislators and others in getting as many people to sign on to the complaint. If you go to www.justicefornine11.org, you can sign on to the complaint. We're also working on getting some organizations to write what amounts to amicus briefs in support of the document. So, and we're trying to raise money to do all of those things. So one of the reasons it's been a little slower than it would otherwise be is that it's an expensive process.
Yeah. So all you aspiring law students and paralegals, you can get a little bit of practice in here on what hopefully will actually end up as a groundbreaking investigation and eventually litigation.
Yes, and we've also been hoping that we would have some people who had information that they didn't ever have anyone to report it to that they trusted before might contact us, and that actually did happen in the case of Kevin Ryan, who was a worker for United Laboratories in Indiana, and United Laboratories being, or Underwriters Laboratories being the investigative contractor for the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which was looking into the reasons for the collapse of the Trade Center towers. And he wrote a letter that was questioning the pressures that were being put on Underwriters Laboratories to come out with conclusions that perhaps were not supportable regarding what caused the towers to collapse and the metallurgy studies involved in that. And he was subsequently fired very soon thereafter fired from Underwriters Labs. But he was someone who contacted one of our board members having heard that we were involved in this, and we're hoping that other people might come out of the woodwork to provide support. You know, where this is supposed to be a live document where we can update the website with things that as they happen and provide the best quality research that we can. We've tried to avoid anything, for example, like the In Plain Sight video, which is rather compelling but also a little bit misleading. A lot of people have concluded from that tape that, you know, that there were some explosions, that there were some pods, and there are all sorts of sort of fringe theories of things that happened. And we really tried to stick with, there were two theories. One is MIHOP and one is LIHOP. And MIHOP stands for made it happen on purpose. And LIHOP is let it happen on purpose. And we tried to stick to let it happen on purpose without pushing the envelope too far forward so that we'd have a very conservative, convincing argument without bringing up things that there's a huge amount of controversy over.
Right, because all you want to do is crack the thing open.
Right, and we don't want to be attacked by groups who say, oh my God, you know, the guy who wrote this book also wrote about Martians and, you know, tear us down because of fringe details that really aren't part of the heart of the existing investigatory. I mean, there's plenty of evidence without going out to the fringes.
Right. Well, and I mean, keep in mind, it's the Bush administration that wants to colonize Mars, which, you know, I think is a crazy idea. Anyway, you're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO. My guest today is Carolyn Betts. She's an attorney working on the, or having worked and continuing to work on the complaint and petition to the Attorney General of the State of New York for an independent grand jury investigation into 9/11. Again, as she mentioned a minute ago, you can find out all about that effort online at www.justicefor911.org. The entire complaint is there, broken out by section, all the appendices, the opportunity to add your name to the petition. And I guess there's just under 6,000 right now. So if everybody that was a KBOO member were to sign the petition, we could more than double the amount. I know you're not all listening now, but you can make some phone calls. Okay, so again, that was just really part one we were talking about, the basis for the complaint. There's, what, 13, 14 separate sections in that, each of which has its own subheadings. And so why don't we call that part of it good, get people interested enough to go take a look at it themselves. And then there's two more parts. Part two is the executive summary of factual matters giving rise to suspicions of criminal acts by perpetrators other than 19 Middle Eastern hijackers. Can you just real briefly describe what evidence you guys feel is so solid that you have that the Attorney General can't but say, yeah, we should pursue this?
Well, I personally think one of the most compelling things, which is illustrated in Paul Thompson's timeline, which I guess you've had a show on in the past.
A few, yeah.
The official story as to what happened at the FAA in the Situation Room or whatever the room is at the White House where the various high-level people were supposedly online with the FAA, and NORAD, all the dealings, according to the official theory, the official story, if you take down just exactly what the official story is and you put it in a timeline and you look at what pretty prominent people who were on the inside and otherwise are quoted in the press constantly, you know, with as competent witnesses, what all those people say happened, it doesn't fit together. I mean, the number of coincidences and anomalies that would have had to have happened in order for this to have been completely an error and mistake and incompetency is so overwhelming. I mean, it's difficult to imagine that there would be official complicity in doing something that would kill potentially. You know, there could have been 6,000 people died. You know, there were early estimates were, you know, maybe 20,000 people died. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily have been as few as 3,000. You know, what it would take to have official complicity is just, it's difficult for a normal citizen to imagine that. But it's even more difficult to imagine if you look at the timeline and the official theory in putting it all together. It's even more difficult to imagine that that happened, that that was true. It's just totally compelling. There have been so many reports on, you know, the collapse of World Trade Center 7. It just does not appear that it could have happened from a fire that was almost going out, you know, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, other than by demolition. And there's actually also taped evidence, I understand, of the owner of the building saying that they pulled the building. Well, gee.
I've not seen video of that, but I've seen it referenced in many, many places, kind of from different sides of the issue. So that's really not in question that Larry Silverstein said, yeah, we might as well pull it.
Right. There are also the insider trading reports, which have never been pursued as far as anyone can tell. You know, the SEC or CBOE seems supposedly looked into these things and nothing ever happened. Somebody doing insider trading in exactly the stocks of the companies that were in World Trade Center, in the World Trade Center, and the airlines, exactly the airlines that were going to crash in there ahead of time, and not other airlines, is pretty compelling that there was some foreknowledge, and there are a number of reports of foreknowledge otherwise. We've got all of these things in appendices. The shipping out of the bin Laden family members and other high Saudi people in planes before there was any opportunity for the FBI or at least any opportunity that was seized upon to interview them about what they knew. Financial transactions, I mean, they're just... We picked out the things that we thought were the most solid, and one of the reasons we amended the complaint was that we couldn't even get all the evidence together, but we just wanted to get it done, so we filed it and then amended it to add more appendices, and we still, I think, have the anthrax appendix to attach.
Right, well, and then there's also the issue of the Pakistani ISI, their secret service, their secret intelligence service, being a conduit for funds that seemed to go to Mohammed Atta just days before.
Right, and there was a meeting with the head of the INI in Washington
on the morning
of 9/11.
Right. With Porter Goss, now the CIA director. Anyway, so there's a whole bunch of, and again, these are kind of like your seven easiest, most obvious things to pursue, each of which has an incredible level of detail. Then there's the B appendix, which is secondary bodies of circumstantial evidence, again, many of which are, rather compelling and warrant further official investigation. A couple of things that you, I guess, specifically developed for this case. I guess these are appendices. There's appendix one, the taxonomy of potential damages incurred by taxpayers and governments of New York as the result of the crimes committed on September 11. Why generate this list?
Well, we wanted to show that it's not just, you know, everybody knows that there's damages to the people who lost relatives in this tragedy. But it goes way beyond that. It goes to the point where we, as citizens of the United States, and in particular in New York, are having to pay well into the future for something like this that happened, and we are going to have to pay for the damages to the environment, damages, the costs of pension funds, the losses in the stock market. You know, they're just huge amounts of damages, and a lot of people really focus on let's put somebody in jail, but what we also felt was important is that people be held accountable in a way that shows that they can't take the money and run. There's huge amounts of money that have gone, there are contractors that have benefited from this whole thing, and there are results that have happened, for example, a whole war in the Middle East, all premised on the official theory that we don't believe. And if the American people and, you know, the enforcement authorities at the state levels can look at what it's actually costing the people, both in terms of their pockets, their taxes that are going to have to cover these things, health expenses, pension expenses, you know, all of that, as well as the cost in terms of loss of a faith in the government, loss of family members in a war, loss of life, also the obvious in New York City, you know, people who actually died directly in the tragedy. If people really understood the enormity of it and the fact that all the benefits are going to a few large corporations who are in a position to give money to political candidates and call the shots as to foreign policy, we're hoping that that will open up the floodgates of an understanding of the truth of how things really work in this country. And following the money is a big part of that. So one of our petitions is, Eliot Spitzer, you go after all the people who were conspiring in this. There were all sorts of, you know, only officials cannot pull something like this off. There are government contractors. There are all sorts of people around who had to have known and contributed to this, both in terms of money and actions. And we want you to go after those people, to keep them out of New York, to penalize them, to get damages, and expose them.
Yeah, I thought I had a reasonable grasp on potential damages, but looking through this list, I went, oh yeah, wow, I didn't really think about that. Very, very interesting stuff, and I guess that's why you're the lawyer.
Right. Well, I've been involved in a lot of Washington, D.C. related what we call spiritual warfare over, you know, who's calling the shots in the system. And I guess I've been fairly active in trying to educate people through legal documents and through being able to put together both the financial part and the legal part and an understanding of how government works to allow people to understand the whole picture of how, you know, things are the way they are, not by accident or by incompetence. They are the way they are because somebody wants it that way.
Right. I believe that's a point that author and lecturer Michael Parenti likes to hammer home, right. Is, you know, stuff doesn't just happen.
Right.
Another appendix that I guess you specifically decided to design for this petition and complaint relates to state jurisdictional matters connected to 9/11, and there's what, like 17 or 18 states listed out here with many, many different aspects in each of them. And the reason when we spoke yesterday, I think you said that you generated this was because in each of these states, there's an obvious reason here on this page in front of me why people there could petition their attorney general. Oregon is not on the list.
Right.
But there are many people living in some of these states across the U.S. right now who could go, huh, yeah, you know, well, I live in Florida. I could petition, well, maybe Florida's not the best example.
Right.
Maybe
being controlled by the Bush.
Yeah, maybe, let's maybe say Massachusetts, where two of the planes took off.
Massachusetts is a good one.
Yeah, okay. So.
And it's a Democratic state, too.
Yeah, I don't like that whole blue-red thing, but anyway, tell us how this can be used by people.
Well, it's a very complex legal issue. What authority the federal government has versus the states. And what we think has happened here is that the federal government is involved in something that's illegal, at least some parts of the federal government. And putting the federal government in a position to investigate itself is not a plan for holding anyone accountable.
Never has been.
So what we're saying is we need to try to exercise some kind of states' rights. There must be some rights that the states have to enforce their laws. There is a the U.S. Constitution basically provides that the states have the original jurisdiction over matters unless there's a reason that the federal government should take those over. And interstate commerce is one area that the federal government steps in with, and another is diplomatic relations. And so the federal government's tendency here has been to say national secrets, international diplomacy, you know, this is an FBI matter, therefore nobody local should have any jurisdiction over these matters. And then the federal government proceeds not to assign any accountability or to do real investigations. So I put together a list of contacts that some of the more obvious contacts, and hey, there could be, you know, there could be some company involved in oil production or airline business or, you know, government contracting based out of Oregon that I don't know about. These were only the most obvious ones. But, you know, obviously there are people who died and they had a home state. There are companies that were contractors that were involved in, for example, PTEC, which is a company out of Massachusetts, Quincy, Massachusetts, that has designed some software systems for the federal FAA and has some heavy-duty Saudi Middle Eastern investment and ownership, which calls into question, you know, whether there could have been tampering with some of the software systems. But, you know, in different states, there are different contacts. The airline companies are based in particular states. And what our feeling is that Elliot Spitzer alone, or Robert Morgenthau, who we're also intending on filing with, he's the district attorney, he's a local guy, district attorney for Manhattan, and he actually went after BCCI when the SEC would not do that. He's quite an enforcer and protector of the rights of the citizens. But Elliot Spitzer and Robert Morgenthau cannot alone do this, and so what we were trying to do is figure ways to garner support from people in similar positions in other states, and possibly through the National Association of Attorneys General or for some organizational way to do some sort of tobacco settlement type of arrangement where different people from different states take on some of the heat and maybe some of the information generating and investigatory responsibility to help out the people of New York. So that was the reason that I put together that that analysis of possible, you know, contacts that other states have with 9/11. Obviously, there are people who've died in the Middle East from every state in the union, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I would assume that could be well the case. Got just a few more minutes here to talk about the complaint and petition to open a independent investigation into 9/11 via the New York State Attorney General's office. And we talked a little bit about parts one and two. Part three is basically just, you know, the petition and asking for, you know, what you want, which, you know, basically is an impartial investigation. There's, again, a whole bunch of detail in terms of specific things to look at. And I'm assuming that a bunch of this is based on, like, the Family Steering Committee and, you know, maybe folks like at Unanswered Questions,
right.
September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, September11th.org, all that kind of
right.
stuff. Okay.
And we're hoping that more organizations can come on and sign on with support for whatever their issues, because it's obviously the environmental issues are great, but there must be other civil rights groups, Muslim and even Israeli groups that want to get to the truth. There's a lot of international interest and several books written by people from other countries. Some of the earlier books on 9/11 were actually out of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're hoping is that as many people who have interest in this and in seeing that we have a real democracy here and we don't have cover-up of potential complicity in murders, that we get as many people on board as possible to support this, both financially and just with their votes, with their signatures.
Right, with their signatures. So again, folks, the website, if you do nothing else, you know, even if you don't want to read the complaint, which isn't all that long, go check out www.justicefor911.org. Those are the numerals, 911. And, you know, if you're dissatisfied with the investigations that have happened so far, just go and add your signature to it. You don't even have to read it. You just, you know, and get someone else to do it as well.
Could I also put a plug in for David Ray Griffin's recent book that actually goes point by point through the Keene Commission's report and shows how they did not answer the unanswered questions of the Family Steering Committee and did not include all of the evidence that they even examined in their hearings in their final report. He's a theologian out of California and has no interest in this as a partisan. He's only interested in the truth, and his book, which recently came out, is very good on that point.
I think you just did give a plug. We've had David on the show. He actually was on for our spring pledge drive on this program, and we gave away boxes of his book at the time.
Well, great.
Yeah.
His first book or his second? Because he's written two books.
Yeah, the first one. The second one is just recently out.
Right.
Yeah.
And we provided that, among other tomes, to the in the publisher's version before it was even fully bound to Elliot Spitzer's office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually both Paul Thompson and Mike Rupert's books were featured on the program this fall.
Right, and we also provided those to... as part of the complaint.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much for giving us a bunch of your time this morning, Carolyn.
Thank you.
All right. And again, Carolyn Betts is the lead attorney on the Citizens Complaint and Petition to the New York State Attorney General's Office to open an independent investigation into all those unanswered questions about 9/11. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And the website, again, folks, is www.justicefor911.org. You can go read the entire complaint. You can just add your signature to it. There's news there and all kinds of stuff. We will be back in just a moment with a little bit more news about 9/11 since we last covered the topic. Robert Hoyt there with Apple Pie off his 1991 release, As American as You. So we're going to go to the top of the hour here, if you already hadn't guessed that. I'm going to read a little bit more 9/11 related information, but I just got the new Harper's January 2005 yesterday and just had to share two real quick items out of the Harper's Index. Everybody likes the Harper's Index, right? You'll like these. Okay, the average number, and this relates to the vote about 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago. The average number of suicides per 100,000 residents in states carried by George W. Bush in November. Okay, the average number of suicides per 100,000 in states carried by Bush, 13.5. The average number of suicides per 100,000 in states won by John Kerry, 9.9. So, according to this, across the country, states that Bush carried in the election have a 35% higher suicide rate across the board. Something's going on there. I don't know what that means, but thanks to Harper's for picking that one out. That's really interesting. Okay, Carolyn Betts referenced one of the biggest stories, in my opinion, to break regarding 9/11. Since we last covered the topic at the end of Pledge Drive when Mike Rupert was on. And that's the revelation that, in fact, three of the four black boxes associated with the planes that hit the World Trade Center towers were found days after the attacks. Honorary firefighter, I'm looking at this from Bella Chow. However, the Philadelphia Daily News is the only U.S. publication, as far as I'm aware, to write a story on it. A guy named Will Bunch, and it's a great story. You can get there from, September11.org. Go to the news and scroll down a little bit. You'll see a link about the black boxes found. A 9/11 rescue worker recently came forward to say he was told by FBI agents to, quote, keep my mouth shut about one of the black boxes a fellow firefighter helped locate at Ground Zero, contradicting the official story that none of the flight and cockpit data recorders were ever recovered. Honorary firefighter Mike Ballone was approached by unknown bureau agents a short time after he and his partner, Nicholas DeMasi, a retired New York firefighter, found three of the four black boxes among the WTC rubble before January 2002. The pair first claimed in an August 2003 book entitled Behind the Scenes, Ground Zero, to have found the data recorders. FBI and New York fire officials deny ever finding either voice or data recorders. Ballone claims agents were adamant about keeping the discovery a secret. Breaking from the text, Mike Ballone was supposed to be on the program this morning. I have, in the course of the last hour, been made aware that he actually has the flu real bad, which kind of explains how he sounded sort of funny when I talked to him yesterday. So unfortunately, he won't be on today, but we will try and get him on sometime in the real near future to talk about his discovery of those black boxes. Again, back to the text. Ballone said he and DeMasi were not the only 9/11 rescue workers to see the black boxes. Many other witnesses were present. Jumping down. Mike Ballone said, I can tell you this, it was all very strange. I worked on the spaceship Columbia cleanup, and you know when something important is found and when something is not. He says, the day the black boxes were secretly carted away, FBI agents and others acted like, quote, something big was going down. 9/11 Commission spokesperson Al Felsenberg said, he couldn't determine if DeMasi or Ballone were among the 1,200 people or so that they interviewed regarding their investigation. Ballone said commission members never contacted him or DeMasi and never asked the two to appear before the group, even though the book was published well before the hearings commenced. Ballone says, I've been contacted by only one newspaper reporter from the Philadelphia Daily News. Flight data recorders are designed to withstand enormous impact and heat. And just looking real quick at the page I printed off the web yesterday that talks all about black boxes from the Philippine Air Transportation Office. Black boxes can withstand 3,400 Gs in terms of pressure and are designed to be fire resistant to over 1,100 degrees Celsius for more than half an hour. National Transportation Safety Board officials said the black boxes should have withstood the conditions in the WTC rubble. NTSB spokesman Ted Lopakiewicz said, "It's extremely rare that we don't get the recorders back. In fact, I can't remember another case in which we did not recover the recorders." Again, that's at bellachow.org. You can also find it at PNI online. And, you know, go to September11th.org and you can see the link in the news section. Summeroftruth.org also has the article, as well as one written by a couple of 9/11 researchers. And let's see here, which one? Well, I think I'll actually read this other one instead of the Kevin Ryan text and response back and forth. Kevin Ryan, as referenced by my guest Carolyn a little earlier in the hour, was the site manager at the Environmental Health Laboratories in South Bend, Indiana. EHL is a division of Underwriter Laboratories. And he wrote an email to Frank Gale, the deputy chief of the Metallurgy Division, Materials Science and Engineering Lab at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Frank Gale heads up the NIST and World Trade Center project. And he's the guy doing a whole lot of research regarding construction reasons, structural issues as to why the towers came down. And let's just say Frank Gale seems as though he could be reversing himself in terms of what he's found and what he is saying. I'll leave that to you to decide, but go again. Let's see. The link I have on this is actually 911truth.org. Look for stuff related to Kevin Ryan or Underwriter Laboratories. The title of this article is called UL Executive Speaks Out on WTC Study. Any of these links that you're not catching, I'm more than happy to give them to you. Additionally, if you go to the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm, go to the program schedule, click Wednesday morning at 10, you'll see all kinds of links related to this and several months' worth of programs. So I encourage you to go there if you have an opportunity. And just lastly, I want to read something here that Representative Ron Paul wrote just real recently. He's a Republican member of Congress from Texas. This is published on Michelle Chosudovsky's excellent website at the Center for Research on Globalization, globalresearch.ca. And this was published on Ron Paul's website December 20th and on the 21st at globalresearch.ca. The piece is called "It Can't Happen Here." In 2002, I asked my House colleagues a rhetorical question with regard to the onslaught of government growth in the post-September 11th era. Is America becoming a police state? The question is no longer rhetorical. We are not yet living in a total police state, but it is fast approaching. The seeds of future tyranny have been sown, and many of our basic protections against government have been undermined. The atmosphere since 2001 has permitted Congress to create whole new departments and agencies that purport to make us safer, always at the expense of our liberty. But security and liberty go hand in hand. Members of Congress, like too many Americans, don't understand that a society with no constraints on its government cannot be secure. History proves that societies crumble when their governments become more powerful than the people and private institutions. Unfortunately, the new intelligence bill passed by Congress 2 weeks ago moves us closer to an encroaching police state by imposing the precursor to a full-fledged national identification card. Within 2 years, every American will need a, quote, conforming ID to deal with any federal agency, including TSA at airports. Undoubtedly, many Americans and members of Congress don't believe America is becoming a police state, which is reasonable enough. They associate the phrase with highly visible symbols of authoritarianism like military patrols, martial law, and summary executions. But we ought to be concerned that we have laid the foundation for tyranny by making the public more docile, more accustomed to government bullying, and more accepting of arbitrary authority, all in the name of security. Our love for liberty, above all, has been so diminished that we tolerate intrusions into our privacy that would have been abhorred just a few years ago. We tolerate inconveniences and infringements upon our liberties in a manner that reflects poorly on our great national character of rugged individualism. American history, at least in part, is a history of people who don't like being told what to do. Yet, we are increasingly empowering the federal government and its agents to run our lives. Terror, fear, and crises like 9/11 are used to achieve complacency and obedience, especially when citizens are deluded into believing that they are still a free people. The loss of liberty, we are assured, will be minimal, short-lived, and necessary. Many citizens believe that once the war on terror is over, restrictions on their liberties will be reversed. But this war is undeclared and open-ended, with no precise enemy and no expressly stated final goal. Terrorism will never be eradicated completely, so does this mean future presidents will assert extraordinary powers indefinitely? Washington, D.C. provides a vivid illustration of what our future might look like. Visitors to Capitol Hill encounter police barricades, metal detectors, paramilitary officers carrying fully automatic rifles, police dogs, ID checks, and vehicle stops. The people are totally disarmed. Only the police and criminals have guns. Surveillance cameras are everywhere, monitoring street activity, subway travel, parks, and federal buildings. There's not much evidence of an open society in Washington, D.C., yet most folks do not complain. Anything goes if it's for government-provided safety and security. And I'm going to leave the last couple paragraphs there for you to read on your own. You can go to globalresearch.ca or house.gov/Paul, P-A-U-L. So that's going to do it for me. Again, questions, comments, feedback, suggestions, any of those things, you can send me an email at kboo@riseup.net. The People Rise Up website has, again, links related to today's program and I think about the past 3 months worth or so. Have a real safe, happy new year. Thank you very much for listening, pledging, paying your pledge, all that kind of stuff. And I really appreciate that you folks still appreciate what I do here, because it's a whole lot of fun and takes a whole bunch of work, but it's well worth it. So if you like it, let me know. It's nice to get feedback. So it's 11 a.m. This is KBOO Portland, and coming up, almost forgot. January 15th, Saturday, January 15th, Portland 9/11 Meetup is having an all-day presentation regarding information about 9/11 that has avoided the mainstream media by and large. It's at the Friends Meeting House on Stark Street, 4321 Southeast Stark, Saturday, January 15th. Noon to 8 p.m. And again, there's a link to that page on the People Rise Up website.